the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to a new edition of Vatican Insider, with my weekly overview of the news, a Q&A, and an interview segment. My guest this week in the interview is Paulist Father Matt Berrios. The Paulist Fathers have been in Rome 99 years, administering to the Catholic American community and other English-language Catholic residents or visitors. We now have two Paulist priests at St. Patrick's, Father Steve Petroff, the rector, and Joe Ciccone, vice-rector. But a third Paulist is here, Father Matt. Ordained at the Paulist-run Church of St. Paul the Apostle in New York City on May 20, 2017, Father Matt served there as associate pastor until July 2020 when he moved to Rome to pursue advanced studies at the Pontifical Oriental Institute. And that's what he's going to talk about this weekend. What are the Oriental churches, what studies he's pursuing, and much more. Now, some papal news headlines of the past week. Sunday, June 13th. Pope Francis addressed pilgrims in St. Peter's Square for the Sunday Angelus, and he reflected on the two parables in the day's Gospel that show us that everyday life, which sometimes may seem monotonous or difficult, is always inhabited by God's hidden presence. It takes our attentive eyes to be able to seek and find God in all things. After reciting the Angelus, the Holy Father prayed for the victims of violence in Ethiopia's Tigray region, as well as for those who risk their lives crossing the Mediterranean Sea, and for children forced into labor. Monday, June 14th, the Vatican released two video messages from Pope Francis. One was for the Fifth World Day of the Poor, in which he highlights the need for conversion and for an approach that counters new forms of poverty in the world, and promotes the freedom needed to live a life of fulfillment according to the abilities of each person. The theme of the Fifth World Day of the Poor is, "The poor you will always have with you," from the Gospel of Mark. This annual day, the 33rd Sunday in Ordinary Time in the Church's liturgical calendar, will be celebrated on November 14th this year. The second video was for the Rome-based Food and Agricultural Organization known as FAO, as it began a four-day conference on Monday. Noting how the world needs to rebuild after the current crisis, Francis pledged the support of the Holy See and the Catholic Church for FAO in its dedication to a more just world at the service of our defenseless and needy brothers and sisters. He urged special attention for the poor rural food producers who are more likely to suffer from malnutrition and hunger. Tuesday, June 15th. Pope Francis sent a video message to participants in the 16th edition of the GlobeSec Bratislava Forum, where political leaders and ministers are focusing on rebuilding the post-pandemic world. His main message was, "Convert death into life, weapons into food." The theme of the June 15 to 17 forum was Rebuild the World Better. As Pope Francis noted at the start of his video message to the gathering, it offers a platform for the important debate on rebuilding our world after the experience of the pandemic, which forces us to confront a number of serious and all interrelated socioeconomic, ecological, and political issues. Francis focused his talk on three concepts: seeing, judging, taking action. Wednesday, June 16th. In the general audience in the San Damaso courtyard, Pope Francis concluded his year-long series of catecheses on prayer by turning again to the prayer of Jesus. In the final hours of his life, said the Pope, Jesus' constant dialogue with the Father becomes all the more intense as he approaches his saving death and resurrection. In the great priestly prayer of the Last Supper, Jesus intercedes for his disciples and for all those who will believe through their word. In the agony in the garden, he offers his anguish to the Father and lovingly embraces his will. At the darkest hour of his suffering on the cross, Jesus continues to pray, using the traditional words of the Psalms, identifying himself with the poor and the abandoned of our world. In our own life of prayer, may we always be mindful that the Lord never ceases to pray for us. Thursday, June 17th. Pope Francis sent a video message to mark 109 years since the founding of the ILO, the International Labor Organization. It is the fundamental mission of the Church to appeal to everyone to work together, to serve the common good, whose goal is, above all, to build and consolidate peace and trust among all. Francis stressed the importance of the rights of the worker, especially as the world comes out of the COVID-19 pandemic. As the world looks for solutions to return to a greater post-pandemic economic activity, Francis said we must avoid any form of discrimination, including consumerism or nationalism. We must look for solutions that will help us build a new future of work based on decent and dignified working conditions and always promoting the common good. We are called to prioritize our response to workers on the margins of the labor market who are still affected by the COVID-19 pandemic. Among these, said the Holy Father, are migrants. Friday, June 18th, the Holy Father held a series of private audiences in the morning. Those are the news headlines of this past week. But again, stay here for the Q&A and the interview segment with my guest, Paulist Father Matt Berrios. Learn all you can about the Oriental churches. Welcome to the Q&A. The words evangelization and new evangelization occur in a lot of stories about the Vatican. And I'm often asked, what is the difference? Well, in a nutshell, evangelization, a first evangelization, is found in the work, for example, done by missionaries who bring the gospel to peoples for the first time, people who have never heard of Jesus Christ. The new evangelization is bringing the gospel to people who have been evangelized but forgotten what they have learned or gotten out of touch or lost interest. During Vespers on June 28, 2010, eve of the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul, Pope Benedict announced the creation of the new Pontifical Council for Promoting the New Evangelization. He said the process of secularization has produced a serious crisis of the sense of the Christian faith and role of the Church. The new Pontifical Council intends to promote a renewed evangelization in countries where the Church has long existed, but which are living a progressive secularization of society and a sort of eclipse of the sense of God. Cardinal Dolan once explained the differences very well in an interview. Pope John Paul II is the one who coined the term the new evangelization. And what did he mean? He says, first of all, we've got to evangelize ourselves again. We traditionally tend to equate evangelization only with missionary work. And missionary work is indeed an essential component of evangelization. Missionary work we think of ad extra to the foreign lands who have never heard the saving name, person, or message of Jesus Christ. So John Paul II said the new evangelization means we must re-evangelize ourselves.
I would always hear from different people at non-Catholic churches that Catholics were going to hell or that they really didn't know who the Lord was. The Catholic Church is not all what people say it is. I mean, it's completely different. There's so many stereotypes. It's very possible to know the Lord, and it's very possible to have a relationship with God in the Catholic Church. I believe I was born into the Catholic Church, and that's where I belong.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church, visit CatholicsComeHome.org.
Now there's a fast and easy way to get in touch with EWTN, the EWTN Everything Number. Call 1-800-447-EWTN to get the latest information on programming, special events, pilgrimages, and more. Our EWTN Family Viewer Services representatives are ready to help you with whatever your needs may be. The EWTN Everything Number. 1-800-447-EWTN. EWTN.
When I begin my prayer time, I always enter into it with the expectation that God wants to teach me something. And it has to start with my willingness to share my heart with God, not just say words at Him. So whether I'm using more formal prayers or a more conversational style of prayer, I have to bring my heart and my life and my real self to God. And by having that dialogue, we're able to enter into a deeper relationship, and He's able to show me how to use all the events of my life to draw closer to Him.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome once again to Vatican Insider, to the interview segment. I have a very special guest today who's also a very good friend, and that's Father Matt Berrios. He's a Paulist priest, and most of you know from other programs, from things I've written, that the Paulist Fathers have been in Rome 99 years, and they've been administering to the Catholic American community and other English language residents or visitors. So we now have two Paulist priests at St. Patrick's. That's Father Steve Petroff and Joe Ciccone. But our third Paulist, Father Matt, is studying at the Pontifical Oriental Institute, which is part of the Jesuit-run Gregorian. So welcome, Matt.
Oh, so good to be here, Joan. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's about time I started looking at something as difficult for some people as the Oriental churches, because I know whenever I've written about it or posted something on Facebook, people say, are they Catholic? And, of course, that's exactly what you're going to tell us. Now, the Jesuit-run Gregorian University, of course, was founded by St. Ignatius himself. It began as the Roman College in 1551 and was the first Jesuit university in the world. And actually, St. Ignatius envisioned a university of nations for the defense and propagation of the faith. And so, of course, here as we sit, the university is 460 years old. This University of Nations is something we see. I've studied there. I took Spanish in the sense of students coming from the different countries, which you'll tell us about. Now, the Pontifical Oriental Institute is part of the Greg, and that was founded by Benedict the 15th in 1917. But why don't I let you tell us what it's about, but first define Oriental churches.
Sure. Well, in the most basic way of understanding it, the Oriental churches are those churches either that are in communion with the Holy Father here, with the Catholic Church, or are part of what we describe popularly as the Eastern Orthodox or Oriental Orthodox churches or Assyrian Church of the East. And essentially, they are the churches that grew up in what you could say is the eastern part of the Roman Empire. And so they, in their expressions of the faith, have oftentimes a Semitic flavor. They have a homegrown flavor, I guess you could say, based either on the culture, the language, the sensibilities of the people. So it's a really varied phenomenon there.
I worked at the Vatican for many years, and I didn't always understand what Oriental or Eastern churches. I think sometimes if you say Oriental or Eastern, you think of the Orient. You think of Japan, you think of China, you think of Korea, nations in the Orient. We're really, like you said, talking the Middle East, where obviously Christianity was born. But then, on my first trips to the Holy Land and to the Middle East, I realized we're talking about the Chaldean, because I spent quite some time in Iraq. The Chaldean is an Oriental church, and the Maronite and the Melkite. These are some of probably the more well-known rites. And
certainly
the Syrian
the larger
Catholic,
ones.
Yeah.
What's interesting is actually that when we say Eastern Church, actually up until maybe about the 13th century, maybe a little later, the churches, the Syrian Church of the East in particular, actually stretched all the way through China, all the way to Japan.
Ah, I didn't
and so
know that.
Actually, when we say Eastern, we mean historically most of Asia, because it also includes Christians in India that always receive
right.
their tradition and their bishop
from St. Thomas. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's funny because I did not know that about the history. So what does the Institute offer? Why do we need a Pontifical Oriental Institute?
Well, I would say that the justification you can really find in the events surrounding the founding of the Orientali. Essentially, 1917, you had the Ottoman Empire, which was basically dissolving in World War I, the sick old man of Europe, as they called it. And most of the Eastern Christians lived under the dominion, obviously with the exception of a lot of the Slavic churches. Most of them lived under the dominion of the Ottoman Empire, and they were experiencing, as we know historically, a lot of difficult situations, the Armenian genocide, the Assyrian Christian and Pontic Greek genocide. And so basically you had a world in turmoil as far as Eastern Christianity was concerned. So Benedict the 15th instituted the Orientale mm-hmm. as a means of study and preservation and enrichment of the Eastern churches.
letting us in the West know that there is another lung, because John Paul used to speak of the two lungs of Europe, because we would always talk about Eastern Europe. Now, when we say Europe, we don't use the word Eastern anymore. We are all one. And that goes for the church, because the Catholic Church was, the Christian Church was Constantinople and Rome. So you had East and you had Rome, supposedly the West again, the two lungs. Now, what brings you to study here?
Well, our mutual friend, Father Ron Robertson, while I was in seminary, essentially through the work that he did and the stories that he would tell us, the literature that he would offer us to read, he really piqued my interest in the study of the Eastern Christian churches, the history, the theology, the way in which it can offer insights into our own tradition. Because, as you say, it's all about that two lungs image that John Paul II gave us. It helps us, even as Latin Christians, have a fuller sense of who we are.
Well, you know, Father Ron worked in Rome. I couldn't remember the years, so I looked them up yesterday. But he was at the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity. That's where I first got to know him. And then, obviously, saying masses occasionally at Santa Susanna at the time. And he was there from 1988 to 1992. And currently, the Associate Director of the Secretariat for Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs at the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. So he's at the Paulist House of Studies with our Father Greg Apparcel, who left St. Patrick's last year, you know. So what particular courses are you taking? Are you taking language courses or Greek?
How? Well, as my spiritual father, Father Joseph Lee, a Ukrainian Catholic monk, once told me, because he was a graduate from here, the name of the game, Matt, is languages. Languages, languages, yeah. Languages. You have to speak Italian, then you have to learn at least how to read French and German, then you have to have Greek and Latin under your belt, then you have to do one or two other languages. So, luckily, I've done most of that already beforehand, but I'm studying Syriac right now.
Wow.
A little bit of Arabic, modern Greek as well. So it's.
Didn't you often wonder when, I know when John Paul became Pope, I think he was the first Pope, maybe the first man that any of us knew who spoke like 12 languages, you know, like 8 fluently. I mean, you wonder
I
how.
I think he still has the record.
Yeah, well, he does. I know Benedict had quite a few, but not as many as John Paul. And you wonder, I having studied in languages and taught French, it's just how, I think you have to have a gift for it, because just for the mind to compartmentalize itself. And on one side of the brain, you know, a Slavic language, on another, a Romance language. And then you've got Hungarian, which is a combination of heaven knows what. Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Different language family entirely. But it's all about finding the style of learning that works for you. I know that I like to work through things grammatically. This just comes from the way that I studied classical languages at City University of New York. Just the particular method that that they really drilled into us worked for me, and so that's the way that I do it. But some people like to learn intuitively by listening. And
yeah. I loved languages because what they allowed, a second language, and then a third, then a fourth, what it allowed me to do, to travel, to learn cultures, to talk in their language with the people of a country, even if I was, you know, not very fluent, just to be able to converse, and then somebody would correct you. But you could sit down with somebody from Spain or France, and there's something wonderful about speaking in that person's language. You don't need shorthand. You don't need charades or
well, hand gestures. It certainly helps with learning the minutiae and appreciating the subtleties of a culture.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness, I probably sounded so pretentious saying this, but when I was learning Greek, I mean, you really don't get Homer, you don't get the classics, I mean, fully, until you've read it in the original, and you get a lot of the word plays, the tone, the timbre of the literature.
Exactly. Now, in addition to languages, what other courses do you take?
Oh, so this year I'm in what we call the propedeutic year, which is essentially the year that shorthand for those of us who aren't native Italian speakers. Basically, it's the year for us to get accustomed to doing academic work in Italian in the field of Eastern Christian studies. So we cover a number of things, Eastern Roman history, Byzantine history, Eastern Christian spirituality, liturgy, architecture, systematic theology, the whole kit and caboodle.
So how long will you be in Rome? I don't think I've asked you that before.
Well, that's a great question. I'm not entirely sure on that one either. I know the licenza that I'm doing, the equivalent of the English master's degree, is 3 years. And then hopefully I will stick around to do the doctorate. That would be maybe another 3 or 4 years. Not entirely sure, so.
And what would you do with this degree, these degrees?
Well, that is an excellent question. Teaching at some level is always a possibility. Certainly following in Ron's footsteps at the PCPCU wouldn't be a terrible thing. I would just have to play it by ear the farther along I get.
Sure. Well, I imagine it's a very interesting field, but a very small one. I don't mean the number of churches or anything else, but still where you would fit in, you know, as a teacher, as a professor, or working for the council for Unity. That would be urgent, almost, it seems to me. Now, tell me about some of your fellow students. Oh, first of all, let's talk actually about COVID. Are there remnants of COVID in your courses? Are people attending in person, half in person, half online? How is it?
Well, it's a bit of a mix. I will give the Jesuits with the Jesuit Gregorian, the Jesuit Consortium, credit for this. But they really spent the latter half of the spring semester last year, when COVID first reared its ugly head, they spent their time really updating the technology, updating the air filtration systems, basically renovating the entire Pontificio Istituto. And essentially, it allowed us to be able to, more or less the entire year, do classes in person with the option, if people so wanted, if people so chose to just participate via Google Classroom.
Well, Father Mark Lewis, no relation to me, but I interviewed him a short time ago because he's a new dean of academics, and the vice dean of academics, and he took me all over the Greg. And I could see the wonderful technology. I saw the machines. I saw machines in the library, you know, to clean the air. And now just getting into the university, you have to have a pass. He had to come out to the front door to meet me because you have to have a pass to get in, which later will become, it has nothing to do with health. Now I think it does measure your temperature. Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so later it won't have anything to do with health. It's just if you get in the university, you can show your ID card in these scanners, and if you're just a guest like I would be, then you go to the office and meet the person you're there to see. Well, that's good to hear about the classes. Now, but tell me about who your classmates are. They're from pretty much all over the world?
All over the world of Eastern Christianity and beyond. Most of them are actually from the countries of origin for a lot of these Eastern Christian churches, from Lebanon, from Ukraine. We even have a couple, I think we have one or two from Russia. We have a whole group from Romania, from the Kerala region, who are from the Syro-Malabar Church. We have a couple of Armenians, so it's really varied. Two Americans, of course.
Okay. Well, for Father Matt, what will you take home? What are you taking home now from your meetings with these people from so many countries and cultures?
My friendship with them, which is, in one way, really what ecumenical work is largely about. The theological dialogue is important, but it's actually the connection and goodwill, the friendships that you make with members of other churches, that there's a communion of love that exists first, upon which you do all the theological heavy lifting.
It has to be great, though, to sit down with someone from the Chaldean, the Melkite, the Maronite, the Syriac, you know, traditions, the rites, and learn a lot more that maybe a textbook isn't going to give you.
Oh, yes. Well, you learn their experience you learn about what it means to be a Maronite today or a Chaldean today, which you don't always get in a textbook. You get the experience of hardship. You get the way in which people frame their joys and hopes.
Oh, I can absolutely second that because I spent several weeks in Iraq, all total on two visits, and I spent about the same amount of time in Lebanon. And just being immersed in those, I went to masses I didn't understand a single word, unless it might have been Latin, Kyrie or something, Kyrie eleison. But I mean, I knew I was at a Catholic mass. And I think the other unusual thing is so many of, if not all, the Eastern rites do allow priests to be married. There are married priests in many of those rites. I think you cannot become a bishop if you're married, right? Yeah. So that's something culturally extraordinarily different from what we know.
Yeah. Well, some of my Romanian classmates, actually, they're currently in major seminary right now. They aren't ordained deacons yet. They have to be married before that. But they, you know, talk about, you know, telephoning home to their sweetheart all the time. And it's just a little bit of a interesting cultural counterpoint to the Roman tradition.
Well, you know, you said it was our mutual friend, Father Ron Roberson, who just, you know, listening to him, having conversations, kind of drew you to this area of study, to this part of the Catholic Church, Catholic meaning universal. Well, what in particular was it? Was it the differences?
Well, I would say a large part of it's the liturgy. And the way that liturgy and theology and spirituality are so tightly interconnected. Sometimes in the Roman Church, we like to, for the sake of having a clear picture of what we're saying, what we're talking about in our mind, we can tend to compartmentalize and divide systematic theology from spirituality, from liturgy. But in a very organic way, they view it as a much more integrated whole in a way that we're rediscovering, and we've been rediscovering
Wonderful.
As a Latin church. So that really entranced me at first.
Well, if you ever want to know more about the Institute, the Pontifical Oriental Institute, the Italian acronym is PIO, P-I-O, which also means pious. We've been talking with Father Matt Berrios, a Paulist father who's with the other two Paulists at St. Patrick's Church in Rome, but here to study at the Pontifical Oriental Institute in an area of the church people don't know about, but it is beautiful, and their liturgy is beautiful. So, Father Matt, thanks for taking time out of a busy day. I know you have some exams coming up, so God bless you for that.
Thank you, Joan.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.